Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Please join us, call in, and or just listen as we discuss the inappropriate and harsh treatment and sentencing of the incarcerated individuals in U.S. prisons. Why are prisoners forced to double cell when receiving life and life without parole sentences? Caged like animals and forced to share a small cell with another lifer when in fact they should have their own little cubbyhole if they must spend a life behind inhumane prison walls. In addition, why are there more than 2.3 million Americans, the highest incarceration rates in the world, with New Hampshire and Maine ranking in the top three for safety? Today we will examine the causes of crime, the factors leading to many wrongfully convicted, many first-time offenders, victims who became offenders, profits made from incarceration by corporations and the Department of Corrections nationwide, and much more. Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light, is committed to bringing awareness. And we ask that everyone who listens in to call in if you want to know more about these issues that are occurring in the penal system in the United States of America. We have occasionally brought people from other countries, advocates, some from other countries who are actually advocating for wrongfully convicted in the United States. For some that are calling in or coming on as guests to talk about the inhumane treatment going on in the U.S. prisons, because they too have been in U.S. prisons. They talk about the comparison between their penal system, their prisons in other countries, in Europe, in other countries, in other areas, the sentencing guidelines that they have, which are 25 years maximum for any individual, unless it's terrorists, unless it's serial killers, really extreme cases. They talk about the comparison between the treatment that their incarcerated individuals receive compared to the inhumane treatment that prisoners in the United States are receiving. We have people in this country running the penal system who are using the gladiator techniques with many prisoners. They are pitting prisoners against prisoners, gangs against gangs, anything, so that they have a form of entertainment behind those prison walls. There are so many things going on, and there is so little oversight in these penal systems, in the prison system in the United States of America. One of the things that we are going to be doing in the month of June is not only bringing awareness, as we have been doing every week, but also we are going to be talking about the need for change, positive change, the need for oversight in the penal system, oversight, overseeing the overseers of the incarcerated, not internal investigations, but independent investigations. We are also going to be talking about the medical and psychological treatment of the incarcerated. We know that there is many providers around the country contracted with the Department of Corrections, but many of them, if you do your research, you will find are inappropriate. They have inexperienced providers, people that are not licensed to do surgery in many cases, and WellPath is one of them. WellPath is an organization, a providing agency that has contracts all over the country, 36 different states. The WellPath founder has been in court, apparently under charges of bribery and corruption, but yet the prisons are still full of WellPath providers, many of them who have caused permanent damage to the incarcerated individuals that they have provided surgery on, surgery that failed. People in Massachusetts, people in Pennsylvania and around the country that have been affected by the inappropriateness of the medical treatment they have received from contracted agencies with the Department of Corrections. We are calling for hospitals, doctors from hospitals. We are calling for them to go in independently to see the prisoners, to examine the prisoners. We are calling on these studies, these case studies that are being done around the country for PTSD, for schizophrenia, for bipolar, and for so many other things, even with orthopedic. We are calling for them to go into the prisons and do these studies with the prisoners. They look for volunteers in the free world, when in fact they could be doing so much good for many people that are being misdiagnosed by medical providers and psychological providers, unlicensed or inexperienced to do these things. We are also calling for the Department of Mental Health to get involved, because we know that we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions, an epidemic. If people really do their research and try to understand what's in the prisons today, we have people that are not getting the appropriate diagnosis. We have people in prison that are mentally ill. We have people in prisons that went into the prison because of addiction, because of crimes connected to their addiction. And if we really think about it, a lot of these people that are addicted are people that are trying to cover up some kind of trauma that they have gone through as children, adolescents, or young men and women. We have people in the prisons who are wrongfully convicted, first-time offenders, and again, victims before becoming offenders. Department of Mental Health needs to get involved, because that is what they were formed to do, to help the mentally ill. And if many of you notice, when there are people on the outside in the free world that are going through psychological issues, and the Department of Mental Health is called in, or even law enforcement are called in to try to stop some damaging things that are being done on the community, they will say they can't do anything until that person actually does something wrong. Well, when that person does something wrong, they're thrown into prison and the keys are thrown away. If people think about it, they're thrown into prison, and the way they handle it is to keep them in prison for the rest of their lives. But where's the treatment? Where is the treatment? They're not getting medically, psychologically, or even spiritually treated the way they should be. Many of them are getting that medical, but they're also getting permanent damage as a result. Many of them are getting the evaluations, but they're being misdiagnosed. If you look around the country, the majority of evaluations that have been done will demonstrate exactly what we are talking about. Antisocial behavior is the primary diagnosis with many, rather than the appropriate diagnosis of PTSD or of bipolar or of so many other illnesses that can be controlled if we have the right medical providers in the penal system. One prisoner had two botched surgeries. Come to find out, the surgeon was not even licensed to practice in the areas that they did the surgery, leaving the individual permanently damaged. That same individual will be going for surgery again, and all we can do is hope and pray that this won't be a third botched surgery. We have to look at what's going on around the country, and we are going to be talking about that today, because we do have 2.3 million Americans in the prisons and the jails, men, women, and youth. We do have the highest incarceration rate in the whole entire world. And we are also going to be talking about prisoners' voting rights, the restoration of their voting rights, citizens of the U.S., to be able to vote again, or to be able to vote if they have not. Because once someone is incarcerated, does not mean that any government should have the right to take away their voting rights if they are citizens of the United States. They have done nothing to this country. And I wish the government would look at those who have done something to the country, who have still have their voting rights. We have domestic terrorism in the United States of America, and many of these people are still allowed to vote. Many of them have not even been arrested. So we have some major issues we need to talk about today, and we are going to start off this morning, this afternoon. We're going to bring on, and she has been coming on the show every Tuesday, and again, I want everyone to know you can call in on Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time from now until the end of May, because in the month of June, we are going to be making calls, letter writing, and emails to the media who should be involved, the governors in every state, legislative members, as well as others. We need to make positive changes. And if we're getting nowhere fast with those that we depend on as our government leaders or as any leaders, if we can get nowhere with them, then we have to reach out to someone. We hear about prisoners going on food strikes. We hear about prisoners going on strikes because their voices are not heard. The media should be going into the prisons and giving these people a chance to voice, because what they're not doing is they're not giving prisoners a chance to vote. They're not giving prisoners a chance to speak about their situations or about the injustices going on, but they're reporting one-sided stories. If I heard one-sided stories, I'm going to naturally do whatever the media is talking about. I'm going to feel the same way all of you feel, because you're not getting the full truth. Many people have been lied against, even in the courts. Witnesses, false witnesses, prosecutors withholding evidence, tampering with evidence, judges taking sides and taking bribes, lawyers who are siding with the courts, even though they're supposed to be representing their clients. We have so much injustice out there, and no one in this country is going to know the full facts unless they get both sides. And we have a media outlet in this country, every media outlet, that only reports one side. They don't go into the prisons. And this is where we need to start focusing on, getting the media to go into the prisons, getting independent medical and psychological providers, getting oversight in the prison system, and defunding. One last thing I want to mention is defunding the DOC, the Department of Corrections, until and unless they can demonstrate transparency. And that can be done in the fact that we're seeing prisoners actually interacting with correctional officers and prison officials in a more humane way. People being treated like human beings, as it is in other countries with other prisons in other countries with their correctional officers and their prisoners. Humane interaction. Until we see prisoners demonstrating improvement in their conditions, and I believe mandatory educational programs and work programs should be put in place for every prisoner that goes in, especially if they're going in for long term. We need to make that mandatory, because there are so many people in prison, unfortunately, who have not been offered or approved for programs they have tried to get into, higher educational programs and work programs. And we have people in prison who are very educated, but yet, a lot of the programs they offer is for people who have dropped out of high school, GED programs. We need to look for humanity in the prison. We need to look at dignity in the prison. And our regular guest today, Dorothy Jean D'Agostino, will be talking about some of these issues as well with me. So I want everyone, once again, to listen and hear, and if you have questions or whatever, please call in. Dorothy Jean D'Agostino, Dorothy, would you like to speak and again,
yes,
tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Good afternoon, everyone. I am very active with Leona, and I want to thank her for allowing me to speak feelings and what needs to be done in the. Anyone can call me at 215-858-0095. They can address me at D Jean, J-E-A-N, Angel, A-N-G-E-L, ShannonLee04@yahoo.com. I am here to listen and to help anyone that needs a helping hand 24/7. I am for second chances. I believe in second chances. Our loved ones are human. They're not a number. Let's treat them as a human being and forget about the number and look inside the person of what they have as intelligence, dignity, mindfulness, compassion. Get away from the negativity. If you want to help your loved ones, everyone, please do it the proper way and go in the direction of where it will succeed to be answered. And let's not have diarrhea mouth that is going to hurt our loved ones. This is what we need. We need a group that is going to fight for the issues of incarceration, mass incarceration, medical, mental problems, and the food situation. There are so many avenues we need to address. We can do it as a whole body, not a whole train. And we can be the caboose for freedom. Let's work on these things. Last night we had a meeting at 6:30. I was very displeased about it, and let me address why. We do have government issues, but the government isn't the only issue that needs to be addressed. Last night at 6 p.m., Texas time, when we were talking about government issues, there was a man strapped to a gurney, Gary Green. Institutional number was 999561, a human being that was given a lethal drug, phenobarbital, to his body. While we're talking about government issues, we did not focus on a life was being taken in Texas. This was a concern of mine, and I'm bringing it up now. He is a human being. He was a human being, excuse me. He was someone's child. A mother lost her son. Issues right now. Let's focus on the issues of what is happening inside the prison walls. We need to address that. Let's address that first and then go to government issues. It can work all together. But let's focus on the issues of mass incarceration, the death penalty, life without parole, life sentences, medical situations, mental illness situations, food issues. That's what is important. My goal is to fight for those first. Then we can address the government. It works hand in hand. We need strong government. We need a governor like we have in Pennsylvania with Shapiro. He is for prison reform, mass incarceration, addressing the system the way it should be. We need a young governor that is willing to listen to our needs. He is in his 40s. He's one hell of a worker. And we will strive to get more people like him. We need to address their background. My son is calling. I will get right back to you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dorothy. What Dorothy is saying, basically, is what we should all be saying. And that is, death penalty has to go. We have to end the death penalty. And the reason I say this is because too many people are dying unnecessarily because of the death penalty. And what lesson is being taught? There is no lesson being taught. Because what our government is doing is exactly the same thing they're killing others for doing, and that is murder. Because they are in uniform, because they have titles, because they are our government, they are allowing people to die. They are killing people. And a lot of the ways that they are killing people are worse than the ways that these people have murdered. But the thing is, we have to realize once again that we should not be killing anybody. Our government should not be killing anybody because they have killed somebody, because that's giving mixed messages. It's letting people know some people can kill while others should not. So the death penalty has to be looked at, it has to be reviewed, and it has to be abolished. We don't give examples. It's do as I say and not as I do, one of those things. It's not. So our government needs to look at the people that they are killing. They don't know these people. They only know that these people were accused of murder. And so what do? They do the exact same thing. They kill somebody they don't know because of the person committing a murder, but yet they're murdering somebody they do not know, and they don't have true facts because they were not there when it happened. So we have to look at these type of situations as well. What Dorothy was saying yesterday, about yesterday, we had the show that we're going to be having every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. about our preparations for our event in June to try to bring awareness and get people involved. We're trying to get legislative members involved. We're trying to get the media involved. We're trying to get the governors involved to at least go into the prisons, the media and legislative members, to go into the prisons, give these people who have never had a voice, give them a voice. Talk about their issues. Let them talk about their situations. And you can't do it all at once. But we expect, or we want to challenge our legislative members and the media to at least go into the prisons two or three times a year to meet with these people. They are human beings just like we all are, regardless of the crimes they committed. Many people have committed crimes because they have been abused or violated as children. They have been resilient. They have done so much in their lives. Many of them did productivity. Many of them got productive jobs. Many of them went to college. And then one thing can set something off so detrimental that it brings back serious memories of what they tried to cover up all those years that they went through. And eventually they stumble. There are so many people in prison who have been victims before becoming offenders. And we don't look at these things. And again, we have people out there protesting against abortions, anti-abortionists. But yet they don't think about what happens when these children are born and when tragedies or traumas happen in their life. And then they become adolescents and young men and women who can't cope anymore. And they do something detrimental to themselves or to someone else. Where are these protesters now? Where are you? Why aren't you out there helping the families when the single parents or whatever it may be, when they're trying to raise their loved one alone? And then we have to look at those who have fallen and are behind those prison walls. How many of you have voted for people that want the death penalty or life and life without parole sentencing for these? People get into everybody's business, but yet when something falls, something has failed, they all of a sudden they want to distance themselves from the very people they wanted to be born and brought into this world. We have a society that's all about who you know, what you know, what you can do, power, greed, corruption, lies, deception. We have to get on the right track. We cannot be serving two masters, as they say, the good and the evil. So we have to get off that track, our government, of executing people that have executed others. And this has to stop. So, Dorothy, I wanted to ask if you could pick up on this and finish where you were before.
Yes, I'm sorry I had to leave. My son was calling, so from a correctional officer, a correction institution, and he has been in 25 years, and I have been there with him for the past 25 years through thick, thin, ups and downs. But let me focus on what I was talking about. When we put someone to death, Gary's family, his mother, who is facing her own physical problems, close friends, attorneys, activists who fight against this very moment, there is no closure for putting someone to death. Only new victims. Mental illness is real and growing strain on the society in America. Unless we decide to acknowledge this as a problem, these tragic results will continue. America, especially Texas, with Governor Abbott, decided long ago to bury and keep hidden, often in plain view. Any problems do not fit into the proper channel of polite society in Texas, or anyone who decides on putting a person on a gurney and injecting them with phenobarbital. There's no closure, people. No closure at all. There is only more problems that exist within. Let's stop the death penalty. Let's stop life without parole. Let's stop life sentences. Mass incarceration. Mental illness. There are many Garys in for mental illness in one form or another. There is no help, and there's no damn justice. We need justice. We need a group of people that will fight for justice. As I said, I'm sorry that I have exploded my true feelings of what the death penalty can focus and do to others. There is no damn closure. There is no closure until we fight for what is going on. Remember, of the Garys, of the people that we have put on that gurney, we can't bring them back. And there's some cases that after they put them to death, they found out they didn't do it. How the hell are we going to bury them, bring them back to life? There's no life. That's not justice. And there's no closure. Not an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. We've got to remember what we are focusing on.
Exactly.
Let's get on board and work in June, straighten out this shitty corruption and the DOC and make them accountable for what they're doing. And then we will work on the government. Thank you. I'm sorry that I've been a bitch today. But
no, I thank you for doing this, because this is what we need. We need to put aside all differences, too. We need to put aside the month of June anyway. We need to put aside religions, and we need to put aside racism and all this BS, because right now it's not about this. We're all having the same. We are all going through the same things, and our loved ones are all going through the same things. So for the month of June, let's put aside all differences. Let's put aside all conflict, all anything that's going on between us as advocates or family members or whatever the case may be. We need to all come together, because if we all come together, I guarantee we are going to see justice. Justice will be served. But as long as we are all divided, like our political parties here, Democrats and Republicans going back and forth, using us, the American people, as the scapegoats, putting us in the middle of all of this instead of coming together to do what they're supposed to do, the leadership. But we can do it if we come together as the government, because the people are the government, and we come together to address these issues of the treatment and sentencing. I know that we're going to see success in some areas, in many areas. And what we were talking about again is we're talking about abolishing life without parole and life sentences. We're talking about abolishing the death penalty. We're talking about oversight in the penal system. oversight of the overseers. We're talking about bringing in professional experienced providers, medical and psychological, to be able to go into the prison and do the treatment of these incarcerated individuals who are getting botched up surgery, who are getting misdiagnosed. Again, I'm going to say this because these are major issues in this country. And I talk about defunding the Department of Corrections until and unless we can see some positive things going on in the prisons. Prisoners have been going on food strikes. They've been going on strikes that they're not heard because they're not heard. They have been so frustrated that there has been riots throughout the country at periods of time, because when they're seeking help and they get told they're just going to have to deal with it. And that's what we're hearing from a lot of these incarcerated individuals around the country. You're going to have to deal with it. We don't want to hear it. The media doesn't go in to get two-sided stories. Legislative members, there's only a handful that go into the prison. And they themselves have said they wish more of their peers, their political peers, would do the same. We need to go into the prisons. We need to get the media to go into the prisons, more legislative members to go into the prisons, to let these incarcerated individuals have a voice. People stereotype. They call all these prisoners hardcore criminals, when in fact they know nothing about these incarcerated individuals. Many have been provoked into defending themselves. Many of them have been in the wrong place at the wrong time to be accused of something they did not do. Many of them traumatized as children or adolescents, doing really well in society until they meet one more destructive person that's going to lie, deceive, and use to bring about memories that went all the way back to their childhood, where they can no longer cope. There was one prisoner. It came out in court. He was violated as a child. So what happened to that individual? They put that individual, when the individual first went to prison, on a block with all pedophiles. This is the gladiator type mentality that we have in the penal system with a lot of the overseers. They have targeted prisoners where they've deprived them of all their civil rights. But yet we have lawyers in the community that are connected, and they're deprived. They pick and choose who they want to represent. The ones they want to represent is the one that will get them notoriety in the media and also with legislative members. Legislative members that have no clue. But they will, like it says in the book of Exodus, chapter 23, verses 1 to 3, they will go with the multitude, because the multitude seems to be the one the people get their notoriety from, even though the multitude sometimes can be wrong. As I say, when they judge prisoners, they stereotype them without knowing all the facts. Dorothy Jean D'Agostino has been an advocate for 27 years. I've been an advocate for the last 22 years or more. I would say 22 years at least. And we have seen things. We have heard things. We've been doing national work. I have been since 2004. Even though I don't have my organization doing national anymore, I still network with advocates and prisoners across the country. I know the things that are going on, and I don't approve of them, especially when Dorothy mentioned this individual being executed last night. It's sad that people have to die knowing the people that are killing them are doing the same thing they did, and yet they're killing me to punish me. Who's going to punish those people in power that are doing the same thing? They're getting away with it. There's a lot that we will be discussing from now until the end of May, and the things that we're going to be doing. And I want to reiterate another thing. Vermont and Maine are the only two states in the whole United States of America who have never taken away the rights of the incarcerated men and women to vote. Never. That goes to show you what two states are doing the most good across the country. because they realize these incarcerated individuals have not done anything to their countries, and there's no reason why the voting rights should be taken from them. So another thing that we will be addressing in the month of June is the restoration of voting rights for the incarcerated, regardless of what they have done, unless it has been to the country. Donna Wynette, founder of Families, Friends, and Individuals for the Mentally Ill. Donna has her committee working on trying to get the Department of Mental Health involved in working in the prisons with the prisoners independently. She has also been trying to get doctors and staff from medical hospitals, Mass General and others, to try to get them involved in going into the prisons independently. We cannot trust these contracted providers, the Department of Correction, are bringing in, because we all know they're trying to save money. They're trying to have control over whoever they bring into their department. So most of these providers that are being contracted with the Department of Corrections around the country, many of them are inexperienced or they're not licensed to do the surgeries that they're doing. And not only are they not licensed, but there's been demonstrated known damages, permanent damages that have been done to the incarcerated. There's one in Pennsylvania right now who has been trying to get WellPath out there to let people know that WellPath is not the company that they should be contracting with, but the Department of Corrections chooses these people because they have control over these people. There were providers that were recommending that an incarcerated individual be allowed to purchase some supportive footwear for medical damage that was done by WellPath providers. The person has had to alter the way they walk because they've been denied, even though medical professionals recommended that he be allowed to purchase from an outside vendor, because the prison shoes are contributing to the problems of many incarcerated individuals who have orthopedic problems. Legislative members have called the prison on behalf of the client, the constituent, and yet they've been lied to or they've been ignored. Now, when a legislative member, whether it be state rep or whether it be a senator, is lied to by the Department of Corrections or ignored, most people in politics would go further beyond just making that call, especially if they're being ignored. They have connections to the Department of Justice. They can also contact the Department of Justice, and they can say, we've been trying to contact this official, and he has not returned our call, or she has not returned our call. Or we're trying to get something going for this individual, a one-time purchase of supportive footwear that they've been denying for the past 10 years or 8 years. These are legislative members. These are people that we vote to put in power because they have more power, or they're supposed to have more power than we, the individuals, the constituents. And yet they're getting treated the same way. So why are we contacting our legislative members? And many of them have not even gone into prison to meet with these incarcerated individuals, to talk with them, to give them a voice. Nor has the media been involved. So these are issues that we're going to be talking about from now till end of June. We will be doing all of this for the entire month of June. And we're going to also be looking at the contractors, these big corporations that are making money on incarceration. And that's why I want everybody to know that you're being manipulated into thinking is worse than it is, because they want to keep the fear in everyone to justify the reason why they have mass incarceration. There is no reason to have 2.3 million people incarcerated when they have all these providers who apparently are doing nothing for improvement. So if we're going to fund the Department of Corrections nationwide, we need to see something positive going on, and we're not seeing that. We see a few people here and there that are doing excellent work, but the majority of them are being told or being mentioned that they're lazy, they don't want to do anything while they're inside. It's not that they don't want to do anything. Believe me, they're trying. The Department of Corrections is preventing a lot of these people incarcerated from going into work programs or educational programs. They're depriving them of getting the appropriate medical equipment that they need to function. They're depriving many of them by putting them in solitary and unrestricted locks. They're depriving them of the stimulation because these people have no way to stimulate the mind. They're feeding them with their meal. They're denying them books. They're preventing the magazines from getting through. They're preventing them from having televisions. Many of them have had their televisions taken away, or iPads or whatever. We get calls and we get information all the time from prisoners across the country crying out for help. We try to get help for them from our media, from our legislative members, and there's nothing that's being done. And as Dorothy mentioned, people being executed. That's the answer to everything. That's the answer to, I'm a president, or I'm a state rep, or I'm a senator. We're going to vote for the death penalty. And not all of you that have been listening to the news know that there are good politicians out there that are trying. There's a handful of them. We need to give them more. We need to help them to be able to do the job. Because if they're being ignored, we need to make the same calls they're making to the same people. But we have to do it on a mass level, which is what I'm hoping everybody will do in June. So, Dorothy, I'm going to leave it up to you to say whatever you have on your mind right now with all of these things that have been occurring.
Are you sure?
I noticed you got emotional when you were talking about that man that was executed. Sometimes tears, we have shed tears so much that sometimes I wonder if I even have any left, because it hurts to know that people are dying because of uneducated people that are causing the death. And unfortunately, we look up to our leaders and they have to do more. And if they're not getting anywhere because they're being ignored, we need to step in and we need to help by making mass calls, sending a lot of emails and letters, and trying to see justice served.
Yes, Leona, I do shed tears. I do. I know God will provide me to have tears of compassion for the ones inside the wall. Remember, they're human. They're not just a damn number or a statistic. They are our children, our loved ones. Yes, we make mistakes, but we don't go to prison. We make mistakes every day. We're not without a guilty day, whether you know it or not. But you know what? We're outside. We're not inside. And some of us outside should be inside for some of the wrongdoing. We are not held accountable. We've got to show that we are there on board for our loved ones. And people, whoever is listening, if you have a drastic problem, please address it properly and don't go to the wrong individuals. Let's have dignity in how we work out the problems. And let's not have diarrhea of the mouth that can cause people inside more problems of retaliation. Let's use good judgment and not false judgment.
Exactly.
I want to say one thing. As I said, I have been a mother of a son doing life without parole. He's been in there 25 years. I'm very proud of the man he is. And yes, he's in there for wrong situations and wrong convictions, and I fight. His own lawyer in the courtroom, when he was about to have the trial, looked at me and said, "You didn't pay me enough. The judge is my friend." These are the damn lawyers that we have conducting business for our loved ones. We have to be careful of who we choose and who is going to provide the right documentation and not throw it under the carpet like the DOC does. There are two correctional officers, one a lieutenant and one a sergeant, where my son is housed, that has charges of child molesting. Wow, we have them taking care of our loved ones. Yet they are guilty, the ones behind the wall. And they are protecting our children, our loved ones, that is doing life without parole, and they're molesting children? Wow. Where's the background check? I believe they should have a background check of all correctional officers, all staff members, at least 2 times a year, no less, maybe more. Let's see what their background shows. There was also a correctional officer that was having a love affair with an inmate. And she was married. It got too much for her that she came to work one day and she blew her head off because she got caught in the process. Our correctional officers aren't without sin, and they use every tactic they're able to. But getting back to my son that I am proud of and have a number, as far as I'm concerned, he's a human being. I will be there 24/7 and do the time with him. I am proud to say he won a diploma with dignity written on it for justice, criminal justice, and criminal law at the college, Brookstone. I am proud to say he is working with mental problems with the incarcerated human being, not an inmate. I don't like the term inmate or prisoner. They're human. And he listens to every problem. And if he is asked to respond to the problem that he was listening to, he does. But he lets them talk and get it off their chest. And that's what has to happen. And I'm proud to say, with dignity, he is doing a hell of a good job. Give our loved ones a chance. Let them know that they're loved, that they're not there 5 years and no family after 5 years. Let's show the love inside. Let's give compassion. It's not hard, but you have to work on it. Get rid of the negativity. Start being positive. We can succeed in this thing that we want to accomplish in June. And we will. But let's get on board and get rid of the diarrhea mouth. Use that mouth for production and help with us. Thank you, Leona.
Thank you. And I'm glad you brought up the fact of families, because unfortunately, there's a lot of families that have not been supportive of their loved ones prior to going into prison, and they have not been supportive of their loved ones since the loved one's been in prison. And Dorothy, can you take over? We got a third call.
Sure. No problem. People on talk radio, please excuse some of the words I use. I can get emotional because of what is going on in the system. I want to focus on solving the problems that we have of the mass incarceration, life without parole, life sentences, medical, mental illness. This is where we have to address it. Let's all work together as a whole. Let's get on that train to freedom.
And I just got a call. I just got a call from an advocate. Now, this is what I'm talking about. We have a radio show that we do, and people are, they don't come on the show, but they call me. But this kind of is upsetting because what we want, again, we want advocates because we are planning something in June, not to be calling us at a home or at a business, but to be coming on the show to talk about it. I'm not out to make personal friends here. I'm out to get something done. And I was going to say, Doug, thank you for taking over for a minute. But I was going to say, when I was talking about families and their loved ones, we have people out there in prison who are hurting, hurting really bad. Because when they ended up going to prison, that was the end of it. A lot of their family members weren't there. Their friends aren't there. But for those that do get out, I'm sure they're going to go looking for the very people that weren't there for them when they went in, which goes to show us that sometimes our family or friends are not as dedicated or loyal as we may think. And that's why so many people end up in prison, because they trust their own family or friends. And while they're in prison, they don't get anything from anyone. No acknowledgement. Everybody runs the other way, turns their back on their so-called loved ones or friends. We learned, this is why it's so important for people to know, education is not only a piece of paper going to college. Education is life experience. And a lot of these people incarcerated have learned the hard way, hurting so bad, because people don't, their so-called family and friends say what happened. They don't try to find out what happened. And many of them already know what happened, know what their loved ones were going to do. And so they do things to help them. And now the incarcerated, they are so good to be bothered with their own family or friends. I know myself personally of somebody that was suffering severe depression 30-something years ago. Everybody knew it. But because that person was over the age of 21, nothing could be done as far as getting them into a treatment program unless they went on their own. And I want everybody to know that when you're suffering from severe depression or any psychological, serious psychological issue, you don't think it's as bad as it is. We on the outside can see it. We interacting with these individuals, we can see that there's something definitely wrong. We can try to let them know they need to go for help. But when they're severe, they don't realize how serious it is until something trauma or tragedy happens. There's a lot out there that people don't know because they don't try to learn. But when you've been advocating for so many years and you've been seeing it not only with your own loved one, but with others incarcerated who have gone through similar or worse situations, we have to start looking at these situations in a very serious way, because unless it's happened to you or in your environment, in your network, in the advocacy work that you do, you don't have a clue what people are going through. And the prisons are full of people that were traumatized. They're full of people who were wrongfully convicted. They're full of people who just need to get their voices heard, to get all this pain out. And I know of an incarcerated individual several months now, not years, but months, before one fatal shot was fired, decided to disclose what the traumatizing event that they went through. Disclosed to the wrong person in a first-time relationship 7 months before the fatal shot was fired. 7 months disclosing this painful ordeal. First-time offense, never involved with the law, never involved to this day with drugs or alcohol. Always working, taking care of the body because he was going to school for medical. Going to school and going to the gym. And it was said in court that the person that he finally exposed or disclosed to said that she was getting bored with him. Now, how in the world do you expect somebody who is working, going to school, and going to the gym, and doing things, skiing, going to football games, going to all these different things, how do you expect them to be able to do all these things all the time? And it's not even their thing. When she said boring, she meant he didn't like to go to clubs. He didn't like to go to bars. Well, if that was her thing, she should have found somebody else to date. But these are the things that happen. People need to know the whole truth. And when somebody discloses something they've been holding in for years and years and years and lets it out several months before an offense happens, they need to look into what happened. This person had an excellent reputation, disclosed something traumatic that happened to them, and 7 months later, after severe depression, fired one fatal shot. These are the things that people have to know, because we get half-assed stories from the media, lies in the courtroom, corrupt judges, corrupt prosecutors, and even a congressman who was no longer a congressman, who was friends with the family of the victim, was a prosecutor at the time. It was his office that prosecuted. There was a lot of things that go on. The person left the country. It wasn't the feds that went after him. It was the local from the same city the crime took place. But these are things that the media don't know because they're telling one-sided stories. They're listening to one-sided stories. There are people in prison that are being abused, seriously abused or violated, that we don't even know about across the country. There are people who have no family. And because they have no family, they're going through all this alone. If they have no family, who is out there seeing or monitoring what's going on? If this was your family, if this was your brother, your cousin, your sister, your father, your grandmother, grandfather, aunt, uncle, wife, husband, and you had this situation happening with you where you had a loved one who ended up in prison, would you stand by them? Would you try to get the story from them? Or would you automatically just assume, because what you're hearing in the media or what you're hearing in court is fact, would you just walk the other way? These are some of the things that people need to think about. Because if you can watch somebody grow to be in their 20s or late teens or early 20s, if you can know somebody for all those years and not see anything that they have done wrong, and then at the last minute decide you don't want to be bothered with that person because what? Of what you're hearing? A real man or a real woman would stick to that person until the end to find out what really happened. If it was your family member and you weren't willing to do that, then I can actually say you're not a man or woman. You're about yourself. We want to see something happen in June. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of groups out there doing the same thing that we're going to be doing, but many of them will probably be protesting. We're going to do it an easy way where no one has to leave their home. They just have to make calls, write letters, and email the media, legislative members, governors throughout the country, to let them know about any of these issues that we're talking about, if it applies to you or your loved one, or if you just think it's wrong that these things are happening. No one has to call in and talk to these people about everything that we've been discussing, about all the injustices, which would be good if you could. But we're only asking you to look at the ones that you think are not right, that you think is injustice, and call, make these calls and talk to them and let them know that this is not right. And one of the main things that is not right is what Dorothy said. You don't kill somebody that has killed if you're trying to show a good example. And that is a major issue. Life and life without parole is the second death penalty. People are given no hope, especially those first-time offenders or wrongfully convicted, or those who were victims before becoming offenders. Life and life without parole, unless it's extreme, as we mentioned every time, unless it involves terrorism or serial killings, no one should have to spend the rest of their life in prison, especially for first-time offenses, regardless of what it might be. And as far as I was talking about earlier with the defunding of the Department of Corrections, what do we see positive going on in the prisons? What do we see positive? We hear about a lot of the drugs being brought into the prison system, but yet we see on the internet a lot of it's being brought in by correctional officers and officials. And yet, because of the coronavirus for the last few years, hardly anybody has been inside the prisons, family members or friends, to have any kind of physical contact with their incarcerated loved ones. And yet, prisoners are still getting drugs. So we know it's not from the families, and we know it's not from the friends. Who is allowed in the prison but the staff itself? This is a drug issue. Many people are sending their loved ones all this money unnecessarily because they think their loved ones are needing the money for canteen or whatever. But many of them forget or they fail to realize that these people incarcerated, a lot of them are in for addictions. And people overseeing these people that are in for addictions, I'm sure, are going to take advantage of it. And Dorothy, I'm going to let you talk a little bit about that. What are your thoughts on that?
On what, sweetie?
On the drugs being brought in by families and friends.
All right. I do go on Facebook that you get K2 drugs on writing paper, on envelopes, on stamps to go into the prison. They sell it on Facebook. That is beyond everything I have seen, that they're advertising that you can be a good supplier by buying it from the supplier. Yes, K2 is dangerous. It kills. If you have ever seen a picture of a person that has been on K2 medication, open your eyes. It is totally disgusting what it does to your body, your mind, and your mental faculties. Yes, the correctional officers bring in cell phones and sell them for $1,000 to inmates and use those guys that buy the cell phones as snitches to benefit their own self. Yes, it's a sad situation. And a lot of the correctional officers don't have to go through the drugs bring it in.
You mentioned that before, and one of the things that should be demanded or mandatory is that correctional officers, prison staff should also be evaluated periodically,
held accountable.
Held accountable for drugs. And, you know, that's something that they talk a lot about training. Training. They put that as first whenever anything negative happens. But I agree with you when you mentioned that they should also be tested for drugs sporadically without unannounced, you know, and doing it. I guarantee they probably will find many of them are using as well. But you, I wanted to bring out the fact, too. I've been told by prisoners throughout the years that a lot of them are afraid to actually, when they go for medical, they're afraid to be medicated because they say that sometimes they medicate them so much that they walk around like zombies, making themselves vulnerable and as prey to other prisoners and staff. And, you know, I thought about it, and that makes sense. Maybe through all of the medication that prisoners are getting, if it's as strong as they say it is, that would be a reason why many would even become addicted and would be buying from guards or selling for guards so that they can get their fix. A lot of these things are going on in the prisons that are not being discussed or brought out, which is why the media needs to go in and meet with these prisoners, because I'm sure that there's so much that the media will find out that they can report on other than reporting on just the bad things that go on in society outside the penal system. They need to find out what goes on inside that will justify a lot of things that go on outside. But I believe that they need to start looking at the things that are going on in and out of the penal system. They really do. And until the media goes in, until politicians, legislative members start going in, unannounced, another thing, unannounced, because I hear from so many people that when the penal system, when the prison officials know that somebody's going in from the government, legislative members or whoever, when they know somebody's going in, they clean up their act. The place is all cleaned up. People are being treated okay until after the visitors.
And they get good food. They're warned before they go in.
You know something? I'm glad you must have heard the same thing that I've been hearing throughout the years. And this is something that a lot of people are not aware of. They're not. The place gets cleaned up.
I feel correctional officers and the staff should have anger management classes because they do not know how to conduct themselves properly. And the language that they use to our loved ones should not be spoken. And that is why there is retaliation with our loved ones to a correctional officer. How would you like to be called the N-word? Or you're nothing. You're where you belong. You're stupid. We don't need to hear that. No one needs to hear that. They are human. They know how to treat a human being because they weren't treated as such when they were growing up. The mentality of a lot of correctional officers, they shouldn't even be a correctional officer. We should also stress out that the staff members should have anger management classes along with the correctional officers in order to provide what is needed for our loved ones. They are not dirt. They should not be treated as such.
Thank you. Thank you. That is so true. You know, you can tell how a correctional or an official, you can tell how people are brought up, the way they were in their workplace, the way they act, the way they respond. And I know one time I said to a correctional officer, this was years ago, I said, you know, when they talk down to people, I said, you know, when as a social worker, I said, one of the things we do, we work with a lot of people that are dysfunctional, but we treat them with respect and we try to help them along the way. And the guard said, this is a prison. We're not social workers. But the thing is, I have known and heard of correctional officers that have done just that. They have tried to treat the prisoners, the incarcerated, with respect. And they're respected by the incarcerated. So when a guard can say we're not social workers, I can understand that. But it doesn't need to be social work. If you were brought up to show respect, I was brought up to respect anyone that was less fortunate than me. Anybody, you don't make fun of people that are disabled. You don't call people by names. You don't try to be above people. Those that are less fortunate, you try to help. You know, those that are starving, you try to feed. Everything that is normal, that anybody in their right mind, if they were raised the right way, would want to do. So when you talk about prison issues and you talk about overseers, you talk about correctional officers and prison officials, you can tell what kind of homes they grew up in. If they grew up in racist homes or if they grew up in a homes that were about power and fame and corruption and everything else, they're going to come out the same way. And then you have a lot of these correctional officers who are bullied in school. So they're going to go into the prison system and they're going to use that. This is their way of getting back. And unfortunately, many of them are not courageous enough to do things one-on-one. They have to do it in gangs. So you have gangs behind the penal system who are overseers. It's not just prisoners who are in gangs. There's plenty of police officers and correctional officers who are also gangs. These are all issues that need to be brought out. They all need to be brought out. So many people, as you said, or Angie, or somebody said on the radio show the other day, there are so many people who are committing suicide And then we also have to question whether these suicides are actual suicides or homicides by staff or even other prisoners, because we know that in every prison in the whole United States, we have good and bad. Another thing that we've spoken about is having prisons for the elderly and prisons for those who are younger, because elderly people, they tend to start getting weaker. And we have so many people that are going into prison now in the communities that are so, so bad. And we have people already in the prisons that are young. They should be in the prisons on their own group ages. So anyone under a certain age, like 50, should be in a younger prison. Anyone over 50 be in an adult or elderly prison. We have to look at all these angles, because when the government starts making all these policies and doing all these things, they have to think it out right. They have to make sure what they're doing is going to be successful. And if it's the Department of Corrections around the country, nationwide, what they're doing is putting people in prison. They're offering programs. Some are able to take them and some aren't. And that's it. We don't see any large number of positive things happening with the penal system. We hear a lot of negative things happening. We hear a lot of the corporations that are making all this money on prisoners. But we don't see anything positive happen in rehabilitation, reform, release. And that's where we need to focus. We need to focus on these issues. 2.3 million American, two point three million in American prisons, the highest incarceration rate in the world. Something is not right. And here we are supposed to be the leading country of all countries, and we have the worst reputation for rehabilitation and rehab. We have the worst reputation for having the maximum recidivism rate, the highest recidivism rate in the world. We're at the top when it comes to human rights violations. We're among the top, what is it, the top three or the top five human rights violations in America? So I often wonder why our president goes to other countries to talk to them about their human rights violations when we have a high percentage right here in America. We need to reform the treatment and sentencing of the incarcerated individuals in U.S. prisons. They talk about parole reform, which is very important too, because many people who are able to go up for parole are being rejected. You know, I have to, and Dorothy, I want your opinion on this as well. I have to question when people in the media and elsewhere say that a person shows no remorse when they get sentenced in court or when they're in court. And one of the things I have to say is, how does one know how someone should show remorse? Because when people, certain cultures, first of all, have different ways of expressing remorse. But also when people go to court, they might tell their family members, especially if there's media involved, or there's a lot of people in the courtroom, they might say, please don't show any emotions when they read out the sentence. When they read out the sentence of life and life without parole or death penalty, a lot of times people will break down and cry. You know, they'll scream. They might do a lot of things. But there are also people that just hold their head down and say nothing, instruct family members to do the same. Because that's what the media wants. They want to see some outrageous screaming going on. So when they talk about a person showing no remorse, that person is mature enough to know that they're not going to act out and scream and do all these things the media wants them to do so they can have some interesting reporting. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are this. When I was listening to my son's trial, and I was in the front row, a gentleman from media on Fox said, well, there's another body that's going on the journey, meaning my son. I turned around, and he was known as the Silver Fox. I turned around, and I said, karma's going to bite you in the ass for those words that you don't even know what's inside my son's heart. The media can damage a lot. They don't know what remorse is themselves. So how can anyone decipher if a person has remorse? People show their actions differently than other people. That's why we have all flavors of ice cream. If everyone had showed the same remorse, people wouldn't take it as meaningful. Remorse is a large word. It shows in some people by not saying anything, thinking inside the mind and have mindfulness. There is remorse. But people can't always show it the way that other people can. And I feel, don't be judgmental. Walk in their shoes and see if you will have remorse. That's
exactly
all I can say.
And I was going to say, when talking about holding in remorse is the same as holding in traumatic experiences that one has had. So they're used to holding in all that pain inside. So they know when they are getting ready to be sentenced or when they're in that courtroom, they know how to hold in that pain, that remorse. And the media does not, because the media is so full of young people reporting in this day and age, they don't stop to think that these individuals that don't show remorse in many cases are people that held in pain for years and years and years. So remorse is something that can be held in, even though they're in full pain, they're very remorseful. They can hold that in just like they held in the pain that they've been holding in for years. So when we have a media that says the person does not show remorse, that does not apply to everyone. And the media needs to stop using that when they say these things, because again, they're stereotyping all prisoners or all people being sentenced. And I can actually say that when my loved one was sent to prison, in the courtroom, during that, at the end of that trial, there were lawyers in the hallway, outside the door, outside the room, the courtroom, that could not understand why this individual got a life without parole for a first-time offense, with no prior record, with no history of drugs or alcohol, knowing all the facts from what they were hearing inside about this individual. They could not understand why this individual got the sentence that he got. But I will say it was racially motivated. It was racially motivated. And that's why it was made to be much worse than it was. And if they were to give sentences according to the crimes, one shot would have ended our pain and suffering all these years. One fatal shot to both the mother and the son would have been perfectly okay with me. But because they choose to take one-sided stories and make a mountain out of a molehill, which is pretty much what it was, they decided for years and years and years, which continues today, in their sick minds on the outside, to continue to make these incarcerated individuals suffer as long as they can. So again, we're going to be doing our thing in June, and I hope all of you listening in will let others know and will join us in the month of June. We will be holding discussions on these things every Tuesday. We're talking about it today because our guest, who was supposed to be on today, is on vacation with her loved one, her daughter. And so we decided to hold this today. But next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we will be talking more on the subject. We want to be in full preparation in the month of June. there were going to be other organizations and groups out in the communities throughout the country that will be doing some other things on their causes. So June will be a very meaningful, productive, and interesting month. So again, I'm hoping that every one of you who cannot leave your homes will join us in making the phone calls, letter writing, and also emailing. And we will be discussing the topics. You can pick and choose, or you can use them all when you do make your calls, and try to demand that the media start going into these facilities throughout the country and allowing people to have a voice, not just the staff, but those who are suffering inside, those who never had their voices heard, those the ones that we speak of or speak on behalf of that haven't been able to. I've had people on the show who have been behind those prison walls, and many that are still behind those prison walls. The ones that are still behind the prison walls trying to get their voices heard through the radio show have been told by staff, or have been given memos by staff to remind them that they're not supposed to talk to the media. Now, why are not they supposed to talk to the media when, in fact, the media are the ones that should be hearing it? If the Department of Corrections around the country is not doing anything wrong, then why are they preventing these incarcerated individuals from trying to get their voices heard? Think about it, everyone. Think about it. Why are not these incarcerated individuals allowed to get their voices heard? I hope that everybody will please be prepared for June. I'm going to take a couple of seconds for everybody to think about that, and I will be right back. Okay. So anyway, audience, I'm going to be shutting down in a few minutes. And again, if you have any concerns, if you have any doubts, if you want to ask questions, if you want to criticize, whatever it is you want to do, please join us. Please make it a point to call in and state your concerns or your opinions, because that's what we're all about. We're all about shedding light, whether it be your light, our light, the loved one's light, the incarcerated individuals, their light, whatever the case may be. We want you to call in, and we want you to state your opinion. Those of you who are out there judging the incarcerated population and not calling in, you have no business judging if you do not want to call in and state your concerns or your opinion. People that speak out of their one side of their mouth and do nothing on the other side, I'm sorry, but that's not what we want in this country. But for those of you who feel that you do want that, then you need to get your own clique started, as there are many cliques where they're not brave enough to bring it out, but they're brave enough to talk about it amongst themselves. We have people dying in this country, dying because they have no voice, dying because they're on death row, dying because they're in prison, dying because somebody else has stumbled them on the outside, dying because the media won't go in and hear their stories, dying because a lot of politicians don't want to get involved. A lot of politicians that are quick to judge these incarcerated individuals, a lot of politicians that may want the death penalty. And as Dorothy Jean D'Agostino said about Shapiro in Pennsylvania, he took the initiative to be one of the other states that has finally abolished the death penalty. We give him
courage.
We give him courage. We give him respect. And I'd like to have anybody that agrees that the death penalty should be abolished, I'd like to have them calling and supporting Governor Shapiro. And Dorothy, you can give that information as well to the audience.
Thank you. Leona, I am so proud, even though I live in South Carolina now, of the governorship in Pennsylvania. And I will support him 150% all the way. that he has acknowledged not signing any death penalty executions. I am so proud of him, and we need to get on board and know our governors, our legislations, and everyone that is on board with us. I am so proud of him that he abolished the sentencing of another person that is sitting on a gurney with phenobarbital in their veins. Thank you, Governor Shapiro.
Thank you, Dorothy. And I'll tell you, when we do the calling, the mass calling and emailing and letter writing in June, please remember to share your support for Governor Shapiro in Pennsylvania. Share your support for any of these governors in any of these states that have abolished the death penalty, because this is deserving of accredited and admiration from the people in the community. So again, it's Governor Shapiro in Pennsylvania, and you will be hearing more, I'm sure, from Dorothy before June. And when you make those calls, please let him know that we are in full support of what he has recently done in abolishment of the death penalty.
And get rid of Governor Greg Abbott in Texas that believes in the death penalty and people being strapped to the gurney and inserting phenobarbital. Get rid of him.
You know, I noticed that, what is his name again? Abbott?
Greg Abbott.
He's been the one in all of all the states. He's been the one that's been doing the most executions. And I agree.
Put him on a mountaintop in his wheelchair. Oh, I better not. God is listening.
But I agree. Even when they had the mass shooting of the high school there, the people were very disgusted with this Greg Abbott, their governor. And those are the ones, see, this is the difference between governors. One is abolishing the death penalty. The other one is increasing the number of people that they're executing. And this is why we're trying to get this in order for June. We want to know when we make these calls, we want to know who we should be accrediting, giving credit and supporting, and who we should not be. And so please, audience, write these things down. This governor in Pennsylvania, to support the governor in Texas, to demand changes. We don't need people in government that are going to murder because someone else is murdered. Just because they are a governor, just because they are in control, does not give them the right to have the same mentality as those they are executing. And this is what happens around the country. But Dorothy, I want to thank you as always for coming on. I really appreciate your coming on and talking about these issues, because it's so imperative, and we need to come together before June. We need to get all these things in place. So we'll have the contact information, names, titles, emails, phone numbers, so that we can make these calls. We also need to come together so that we know exactly what issues we will all be discussing at that time. Again, I thank everyone for listening in, and I pray that everyone will be calling in next Tuesday. In the meantime, tomorrow we have a guest coming on, and unfortunately, I don't have the information, and I will right now get it tomorrow, Thursday.
Kuwait.
No, I'm just getting the time now. Tomorrow's the 9th, so we have on with us tomorrow Mark Clemens, one of Chicago's best-known torture survivors, will be speaking out about what he went through and what his organization is about now. And that is Mark Clemens from Chicago, who will be talking about the work that he's doing now, many years after being a torture victim behind the prison walls. So I thank everyone for listening in. We are now going to be closing. Dorothy, once again, I thank you for being week. This is what you call loyalty and dedication. You're not just fighting for your loved one, you're fighting for all prisoners, and their families should be coming on and showing the same loyalty as you have been showing. Talk about dignity. I can understand why your son got a certificate with dignity on it, because he has a mother that has been fighting with and in dignity. So, Dorothy, thank you, as always, for coming on, and I look forward to you being on with us again every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Audience, thank you for listening. Again, look at the facts. Remorse does not always come from outside expression. A lot of times, remorse is still hidden away in the pain and suffering of prisoners and others in the communities that they've been holding in for years. Trauma will suppress remorse as well. Thank you so much, everyone. And we are now ending this episode.
Well spoken.
Thank you, Dorothy.